Thanks for tuning in to Jin and Tantra. In this episode, we discuss the Taoist ideas on health, longevity, and immortality, and what that means for our lives today. As this series continues, we had wanted to take the opportunity to discuss the obstacles to authenticity and spontaneity in a more broad way, as our series on these obstacles in general wraps up here in the next few episodes. Enjoy.
Welcome to Jin and Tantra, spirituality with a twist. The podcast that takes Tantrism, Buddhism, Taoism, Sufism, Kabbalism, Shamanism, Chinese medicineism, and all of the other isms we've been influenced by, and blends them into a tall, crisp, cool cocktail your spirit has been longing for.
I want you to get together.
Now, isn't that refreshing?
I want you to get together.
Hey, fellow GNTers, those of us who like our spirituality with a twist. So we are doing all of these 9 things that can fuck up your life episodes as part of our little book project as well. The GNT soon to be coming soon. Maybe that's optimistic.
Soonish.
Yes. To be coming book. And sometimes what will happen is one or the other of us will have a little bit of an inspiration to talk about something. You know, we've been working through especially obstacle number 5, the mischievous mind, as Daniel so aptly called it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did a lot of stuff on that. And what will happen, though, is one or the other of us will have an idea of like, well, maybe we should do this thing for the podcast today. Daniel will have an idea or I'll have an idea. In this case, it hit me like we hadn't really talked about obstacles to what. What are these obstacles to, really? And in terms of the book project, when Daniel texted me back, he was like, yeah, that defines like the book project. In a way that I thought felt meaningful to you, Daniel, right? To kind of define what you thought the meanings were, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe almost like this is the start of a book or something,
mm-hmm.
right? To address that first. And so that's what we'll try to talk about. And maybe as much as we can and how we see it while giving some credit to the Taoists too.
Mm-hmm.
But especially with the idea of like, I suppose in a certain sense, modernizing it to how we see it or something. And I felt that's been like really important in this whole project to me. I don't know. How do you feel about that, Daniel?
Yeah. No, modernizing is the only, I mean, that's all that we can do. I don't know. I mean, how we couldn't antiquate it any further. You know what I mean? Like when your yak is stubborn and won't walk with you up the hill to get water, you know?
Yes. It's analogous to when you are trying to make ghee.
That's right. Yes, exactly.
Yes. Yes. And the churn is stuck.
That's right. When the wax in your candle dims and you cannot write anymore as the light has gone down for the day, you know, it's like not exactly. So, but, you know, so modernizing it, of course, right, as we've said numerous times, like teaching's antique, teacher's modern, contemporary, teacher's contemporary.
Yeah, it has to be in the now for sure.
It has to be. That's where we are.
I wanted to talk about the source text with that a little bit, just to kind of say how it's talked about there. And then maybe the idea that this is, again, something we were just alluding to, that, you know, parts of this you'll have to let go. But anyways, here's what they say in the source text real quick,
mm-hmm.
you know, at least how the text frames itself. So I like talking with, you know, Chinese medical students about this because I almost do it like in the first class of the first, very first semester people are on campus. It's one of those things I say within the first hour.
Sure.
Which is this idea of what are the goals of, let's say, Chinese medicine, Taoist versions of Chinese medicine. And they talk about this idea of health, longevity, and immortality.
Yep.
Two of those seem easy. One seems hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So the health thing, they're going to tie it into what they're going to call the lower path. And again, this is the source text we're working with here for our 9 things that can fuck up your life is an old Taoist book, especially what they call alchemical Taoism, which is basically how you use the energies of the body to transform a person.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that, when you can do that, is you improve the person's health,
mm-hmm.
right? And the basic part of the path, the early parts of the path that they kind of describe in this book is like really working on your health. And it has to do with like how the different organs in the body communicate with one another, and the energies associated with those organs kind of tap into one another, and you can improve the basic health of the person. So then that really, the way I've always talked about that is that means you're more healthy in the immediate.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is more like a longevity thing. Can you be healthier for longer periods of time, right? Like, can you be like one of those older Asian ladies in the park who are doing their things to the K-pop? You know, that actually happens in the park near me. Where the older ladies are there with their K-pop playing, and it's these, you know, older Chinese ladies, and they're like kind of squatting down on one leg and doing all this shit, and they're like in their
twerking,
70s.
Like, they got their twerking videos up on TikTok.
Well, they got it moving, you know, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But they're doing their thing, and it's like pretty impressive because it's these old ladies, you know, like what you kind of imagine in the parks in China and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like your health and longevity things. And then the immortality one, which gets to be the controversial point. Yeah. I thought the path thing was pretty interesting, though, because we haven't talked about that in a long time, but the whole idea of ground, path, and result, right?
Mm-hmm.
The way these old books talk that way. What's the ground? Yeah. Well, in this case, the ground is your being, mm-hmm. your body, your mind, your spirit, right? Your energies. The path is what you're putting the development through, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what we're really talking to is like, what's the result, right? Like, what are the kind of things that we'd be working towards, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But framed in a way that hopefully works for modern people too. So I went to the source text, Daniel, and the immortality thing is a tricky one. And as I kind of wrote in the notes for myself, I think it's the kind of thing that, again, you sort of have to let go of, because it's really hard for me to imagine that any 21st century person who's just being introduced to this, doesn't come from some Taoist background, could get too much into the way this is going to be described. It just isn't going to speak to us. But I don't think that means that the texts aren't important or what they're teaching doesn't work. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this podcast, right?
Right, right.
Or we wouldn't be doing Chinese medicine in the way that we are, or whatever, whatever part of this you want to look at. So it's kind of like using classical teachings while kind of having one's own take, right?
Yeah.
And as you were saying it earlier, it's kind of what like has to be. Sorry, my voice is being funky. It has to be the case, right?
Yeah.
But anyways, in the source text, just to say it, to give it its due props, right? Is that it sort of talks about these five types of immortality then. It talks about the ghost immortality, where in terms of like yin and yang, the person is like all yin and they're kind of trapped in a ghost world. So that doesn't sound good. And the source text says it's bad. So no surprise there. And then it talks about kind of a human immortality, which is just sort of longevity. And, you know, being able to live a long, healthy human life, kind of like the health longevity thing. But then it flips the script and it goes to like an earthly immortality, which almost starts to sound like Methuselah kind of biblical stuff, where you'll live this incredibly long, superly long lifetime or something like that, right?
Mm.
Which, again, I don't know what we think about that as modern people. I mean, I've talked to people who identify as Taoists who want to do that, right? We had on Keith Brewer in his episode, and I think some part of him like is attracted to that idea. Can you go through and can you live these, you know, more drawn out longer lives or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how, you know, accessible that is to 21st century people, if we're really going to vibe with that or not. I would think probably no. And I don't know what it totally means in the source text either. If your expectation should go in that you're going to live for some extendedly long period of time, I don't know. That wouldn't attract me. Would that attract you? I don't know.
No, but it is an interesting thought. So not to go too deep off on a tangent, but we'll just talk about time, because, you know, I love to talk about time.
Oh yeah, you're into it now.
I've been loving time. You know, time always blows my mind. Because it doesn't exist. Whoa. Okay. It's a construct. No, but
it's a construct.
Yeah. There was somebody who was a patient of mine who was, I don't know, talking about their schedule or whatnot. And I had mentioned a story that I had heard that someone, and I think it was a Buddhist teacher of some type, whether he was Zen Buddhist or whatever he was, but he told a student, hey, don't leave that stone, this rock, on top of some other rock or something, right? Just on your desk. He said, don't leave the stone like that. And the student was like, why not? He's like, oh, well, eventually it's going to crush the thing underneath. And the guy was like, Yeah, in like 1,000 years. And he goes, oh, he thinks completely different about time than I do. He goes, in that moment,
Yeah.
he's like, and I was just like blown away. And so I was thinking about this with my, and talking about this with my patient just to try to get them to, change their perspective on their schedule so they can come in and, and relax when they're getting, their acupuncture treatment. And it's an interesting thought when you say, like, if someone had planned on living for 120 years, let's just say that was their roughly expected lifestyle, life expectancy. I think if you were to poll most Americans, they might say like 80. I don't know. I don't know what people would say, but I don't less. I wouldn't guess it would less than 80, but I don't think most people think they'd live till 90. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just going to throw this number out there, right? Without any evidence. And so you sort of live your life in that, trajectory, right? When really it means half your life would be over at 40. So that's really when you should have your, quote unquote, over the hill party. So you're 39 and then you're over the hill. That's how that goes,
Yeah.
And if you knew an end date, would you act differently, right? This is the preciousness of human existence, the certainty of death type talk that we've had before many times. But if your time frame was different, if you had this ingrained in you that your time here was longer than 80 by like, half of that, right? That you might do things differently. Now you're going to have to work longer and, whatever the case is. But I just think it would change your mentality on things. So I think it is a kind of an interesting way to free up how you might do things on a daily basis, or at least your time frames would change and what you might be into would be a little bit different, as opposed to like burning the candle on both ends because you're going to be gone soon anyways. You know what I'm saying?
It's an interesting way to think about that. I do think that whole, I mean, it goes to what a little bit we were talking about off mic. I think that whole idea of preciousness of human life, certainty of the finality of human life, such a like a, it's the lead, right, of the stages of the path when Lama Tsongkhapa does it, and probably all those Himalayan Buddhist teachers do it that
I'm
way,
sure.
right? So it like does become something that you get to think about, right? And how much time do I have to accomplish the things that I feel like I really need to do, the ones that I really need to do? Right. Just, it reminded me of one other little anecdote, which is a little off again, but I'll, the minute you talk about like the rock on top of the rock, there was a thing with Tonoi Rotaishi, who was, Rotaishi's kind of interesting phrase. It's like a teacher of Zen masters. So a Zen master is a Roshi, a Rotaishi is someone who teaches Zen masters. It's a pretty high level dude. And I got kind of interesting in that I was studying in a Zen place where they had a couple of those Rotaishis who had been sort of in the stream of the people, So my personal teacher was Hosokawa Roshi, but he was like under these Rotaishis who were teaching him, He's a very impressive person. But anyways, I think it was Tonoi Rotaishi, and like one of the students was down in Hawaii where the main monastery was, and they were doing some project on the monastery. And then Tonoi Rotaishi said something like, "Stop torturing that piece of rope." Because the person was like fucking around with the rope, wasn't doing it in a very thoughtful way. The rope was getting all jerked around, and he was going like, "Stop touching that rope." And it's an inanimate object. You would think, well, what's he talking about torturing the rope? But you could see that they were kind of valuing every single aspect of the world or something, right? Was sort of there, and you wouldn't torture the rope either. You wouldn't torture the fridge. You wouldn't torture your car. Because you're showing disrespect for the world, and you're going to burn that thing out. And you're going to have to replace it. And you know what I mean? It's kind of like another interesting little slant. The time slant is there, right? But also sometimes the way they think about inanimate objects is different. Don't torture the world. Stop torturing that rock. Why are you torturing that rock? Stop it. Which raises raises your sense of consciousness to a different level, right? And all of a sudden you're thinking like, well, I don't want to torture my cell phone or, whatever, don't torture those things, right? Maybe the cell phone deserves it. Maybe the cell phone deserves to get a little torture. But yeah, okay. Anyways, it's very cool. So yeah, the time thing is interesting. It creates that little bit of something, right? Yeah, that makes you think deeper about what you're doing. Yeah. All right. So that's the earth one. Then the next thing they talk about, Daniel, is this spirit immortality, and that sounds like a lot more kind of Buddhisty like to me. but they talk about the spirit of the person, the soul of the person, or the, you know, the shen of the person in Chinese medical speak, you know, that separates from the body or transforms away from the body and becomes its sort of its own thing. So that has more of like kind of that enlightenment kind of feeling to it or something like that, right? So that's the spirit immortality. But then they do another funny thing after that, which is really Taoist, or at least, you know, Taoism is like anything else, Christianity or any of these other things. It's big. It has lots of different beliefs within it, right? But certainly one of the ideas then becomes this celestial immortality, where they kind of say this is the highest thing for a source text like this. And it's like almost like envisioning that there's, I guess in English you'd say an afterlife or something, but there's something beyond this life, right? That these spirit immortals can enter into. And it almost has this feeling of like this giant hierarchy of all these different levels of spiritual accomplishment. And then people can go like walk through this entire hierarchy. It's almost like you'd be working yourself up some like huge bureaucracy or something like that. And it has a little of that vibe to it. And it's a funny part of talking about in Chinese culture, because it's there for sure. For whatever reason, certain parts of Taoism have this idea of this big hierarchy. But, you know, we were talking about Kabbalah last week. Sometimes Kabbalah talks that way too, right? There's this huge hierarchy. And you can kind of climb your way up this hierarchy or something and go to like higher and higher levels within this celestial immortality. But, you know, it's there in Taoism. I wanted to acknowledge it because it's in the text. But again, I wanted to also talk about, like, it's hard to get into that too much as a 21st century person, you know?
Right, I agree.
And I definitely had friends who were thought of themselves as Taoists, but like they were kind of, you know, they were didn't like this part. So I had a good friend of mine back from grad school, Robert Wilson, one of my good friends from school. We always had the nickname for each other, Bobo, because he dated this Korean lady. And apparently that's a term of endearment in Korean. So we call each other Bobo. And so he's my Bobo. And so, you know, he was very, like, he liked Taoism, but he was very uncomfortable with this. I remember we had conversations about it. And he was like, I don't want to be in some huge Taoist hierarchy down at the bottom, you know? Being very kind of nervous and uncomfortable. And I said, yeah, I'm not into that either. And we had kind of interesting conversations, because at some point he said, well, you're a sorcerer. And I was like, what do you mean by that? And he said, you want to go back to the source of things. You're a sorcerer. And I was like, okay, I mean, I could take that, you know? And he said they didn't want to do that either, but I kind of have that vibe in me. I want to go back more to the source of things. I didn't want to sit around in some giant spiritual hierarchy bureaucracy thing or something like that. Does that speak to you too?
Sorcery, yeah.
Go back to the source. I'm more interested in that.
Well, I think, you know, because of my shamanic practice, the term sorcerer has a different connotation. You know,
I mean, he used it in a very particular way. So I was like, okay, that's cool.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. One who seeks source. Yeah. You know, I think when I hear sorcerer, I think of one who conjures, you know. I know technically that would be a conjurer, but like generally when I think of sorcerer, I think of wizard, you know?
I mean, I like ritual magic. I actually do like ritual magic.
Right. Right.
But I mean, he was more like, he's a very clever guy. I wanted to mention his name because he has a practice up in the Upper Peninsula in Michigan. So if you happen to be around in that area, you can like look him up, and you know, he's an interesting character to meet, you know, if you're in that part of the world and you happen to be listening, I want to give him a little shout out. But he had interesting takes. So I was like, okay, that's an interesting way to think about that, you know, where he didn't want that. Anyways, there it is. So I think that's a perfect example of something where I'm like, okay, that's cool to study on some level. I find it interesting. It's a whole chapter in the source text, but I'm like, you know, I don't think that's the goal for us now, what we're obviously trying to achieve through these things, you know?
Right.
Though I think there are Taoists who still talk this way, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting.
We're using these techniques for a different reason, right? Yeah.
I was having a conversation with somebody maybe like week before last, and you know, we were talking a little bit like political ideology, and he was saying, well, he goes, I think at the bare bones, on the right side of the aisle, there is a very clear hierarchy structure top down. And on the left side of the aisle, it's everybody is equal. Like there is no equality. Like there is no hierarchy. It's just, everybody's just there. There's just stuff for everyone. You know, like that's how it should be. And it took me a second, and then I was like, you know what? I do think so. And there is something to be said about either one, But I feel like many people, at least maybe politically, who are politically motivated towards the left in this way, which are probably, you know, not to stereotype, but probably going to be a lot of folks who are practicing these kinds of things, are going to have that more, you know, communal idea. It's more kind of egalitarian approach. Yeah. And in comparison to something that has a hierarchy, especially that feels, you know, potentially religious, you know, religiousness in based, or there's a bureaucracy, or there's a corporate business feel to it, right? Because that has a very clear structure. That seems to be the opposite of a Taoist sense, right? That is the, you know, the Tao is like the undifferentiated, that this is clearly differentiated and delineated. Another D word from like Daniel, you know?
Nice alliteration, right?
Yeah. So like that just seems antithetical to what the perceived teachings would be. And I can't say that for everyone, but I could say from the friends of mine who have dabbled in Taoist thought, as in they'll read, you know, they'll mention, you know, yin yang, and they'll say, I want to live by the Tao. I'm going to live through the, you know, like they'll have some books and they'll, you know what I'm saying? They're not, I don't know how deep they're diving in the philosophy, but I think this, you know, the kind of superficial layers of understanding is good enough, you know, is good enough. It provides them with the philosophy, provides them with something to kind of think about. And I know I'm doing that argument where you use one or two examples and then extrapolate. But for the sake of this conversation, I'm not always prepared for everything. So like, if you're saying I'm putting up a straw man and you're listening to this, yes, because that's how conversations work. So let me argue against myself before anybody else does, you know?
No, it's okay. You're just doing case studies, right?
Yeah. So, yeah,
which I think is going to be an important part of this conversation for me too.
Yeah. So that's kind of how I think about it and why that would be the case, you know?
But I think that's an interesting way, like the way my Bobo Robert Wilson talked about like going to a source. I think a lot of people that feels intuitively comfortable.
Yeah.
Let me go to a ground of being. Let me go to the source, the thing that's either transcendent or beyond all of these hierarchies or something.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's no, I wanted to be honest about it because there certainly is this in a lot of these spiritual traditions, like in some of the Kabbalah, there's this Merkava stuff where you climb up through the Jacob's ladder of all the different heavenly realms or something. And people are interested in that, right? Mm-hmm. Big mystical traditions are like that. And there's like mystical Taoist things, which I kind of fascinating on some level, but it's a little bit of a similar vibe.
Mm.
Imagine that there's these layer upon layer of like mystical realities beyond this one, and you can kind of climb them up, like I guess kind of like a Jacob's ladder thing again, or like a big tree of life or being. They climb up that vibes, you know, like with people historically. So, you know, we've done our historical shout out, right?
Yeah.
And we talked about it, though I don't think that like my goal in doing Taoist things would be that, you know, but it is a part of the tradition, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. I think I know people who are really serious Taoists who, you know, don't think about it that way, but it's a big chunk of Taoism that's like that. So, you know, just to acknowledge it. And it's definitely in the source text too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's, you know, it hit me when, you know, I was thinking about this one, that even when we're quoting from the individual obstacles,
mm-hmm.
and I get it, for you it's important like to quote them before we do it, right? Mm-hmm. You want to do that. And I decided to do the same thing here.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I definitely feel like we have free license as 21st century folks to go and say, okay, well, this is how I'm going to frame this.
Yeah.
In a way that's relevant for us now. Right.
Yeah.
And then we kind of bridge our two gaps that I think we want to do in this thing, where we're using things that have a lot of root to them. They have a lot of power to them, you know,
mm-hmm.
they've been refined and they're wonderful. Right. But you also can go through and like, okay, let's address these as people now.
Yeah.
Jin Tantra.
That's it.
Spirituality with a twist. All right. So if that's the case, then, you know, then you're in the situation of what to keep, what to let go of, and then what are these things obstacles to?
Mm-hmm.
I had a kind of a deep conversation with someone close to my heart a little bit recently about these kinds of things. And so I was thinking, okay, so what is this about? Like, how would we frame this? And part of this I thought of as being, like, what are alternatives? And we're not going to talk about immortality in this Taoist-y way from this book.
No.
That's not going to speak to us. but what are these obstacles and what are these things supposed to be dealing with? And I thought some of it was psychological and how you might frame it. So I thought, to me, what are these obstacles to? And one of the first things I wanted to like kind of touch on with it was obstacles to like authenticity.
Okay.
To really feeling like you're being sort of the truest version of who you are. These are obstacles to that. In potentiality, you know? And for me, I always saw the Zen and Taoist parts of my experience, certainly those whole chunks of my life, where those are my main practices, as being my wrestling with the question of like authenticity.
Mm.
Right? How do I become a true version of who I am? Now, when I talk to people who identify Taoists as Taoists, I know some of them talk that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, our anthropologist on retainer, Ryan K. Davenport, talks this way. Like for him, it's an authenticity question, right? Mm-hmm. And when he and I talk kind of deep, that's it always kind of boils down to that idea. Like for him, Taoism has like, how do I become the authentic version of who I am?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Expressing myself in an authentic way. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. So for me, that was a lot of, say, the Carl Rogers psychology, who talks about authenticity, right? One of our favorite Carls. And, you know, Zen and Taoist stuff. And I see that as also probably like classical Taoism in a way,
mm-hmm.
right? The idea, like, how do you express the true, your true inner nature of who you are to show, you know, your true inner Tao, something like that. Does that work for you?
So it's interesting. I'm watching my mind, and you know, maybe we all do this, but I know I do this for sure. I sort of take things as they're coming, you know, and then I look to see if and what they pull up and pull out, and what they nab along the way and what they reject along the way. And so that process of you know, an enigmatic merry-go-round full of magnets, you know.
Oh, alliteration again, my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
A magnetic merry-go-round full of magnets?
Yeah, yeah. Enigmatic merry-go-round.
Enigmatic merry-go-round full of magnets.
Yeah. Mm. I guess I could say maybe.
That's a lot of ums.
Yeah. Enigmatic merry-go-round.
You're already finding your literary voice. We haven't even started writing.
Yeah. But what comes to me is, so there, the Tibetan word for yogin or yogi is Naljor.
Yeah.
Right. Naljor. And Naljor it has a definition to it, right? One who establishes and maintains the authentic state of mind or the authentic state of being.
Mm.
And so, and I use this regularly in my yoga class. You know, we do physical asana, but we also do pranayama, and I do a ton of like balancing on you know, your hands or your feet, because it really helps to rein in your attention very intensely. Because you're just, people's balance is so bad that this is a difficult thing to do for them. But it really helps and moves people to a deeper state and whatnot. But I mentioned that again. So Naljor, the Tibetan word for yogin, one who establishes and maintains the authentic state of being. And these obstacles that we have been discussing, if to what you're saying, they are obstacles to your authentic state of being, to your authentic state of mind. And they will, you know, they as in the people who wrote, whoever these teachings are, you know, reference the mind as like a clear blue sky with, you know, and if there are clouds, they pass through, but they are not blocking the sun permanently. They're just in the way, then they continue to go. And so your inner state of mind, your authentic state of being, is one of expansiveness, one of peacefulness, and one of your own making, right? And I'm sure it's more than this, but I don't want to speak with negation. I like to keep things positive when talking about positive state, you know, open states like this. So I'll leave it at this. And to me, that seems to fit, right? That seems to be appropriate for what you're saying.
I had kind of like one of our G&T epiphanies in doing these episodes, and I can't say exactly when it happened, but we talked through these things. And sometimes when you're prepping this stuff or you're talking through it, there's aspects of this or elements of this that hit you in the way that hadn't really hit you before.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, like, the way you're describing there is kind of like a Buddha nature thing, right? You're describing mm-hmm. the deepest parts of the mind, right? Mm-hmm. Which can be compared to a, you know, a full open blue formless sky, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's very like what they call Dzogchen-y or Mahamudra sounding, Great Seal sounding, or, you know, those kinds of things, right? Where mm-hmm. you kind of try to tap into this deep part of who you are. I kind of go to the what we've been talking about a lot lately, the idea of like formlessness and bliss. Those are sort of like the way I would talk about that core idea. So I was like, okay, that's cool. And I knew we were going to be talking about that from the moment we started this podcast, right? But there's another part of it too, which is kind of big in the Zen and Taoist thing. And then in the Carl Rogers thing, I'm alluding to psychologically, you know, him being influenced by Chinese culture, which is like the spontaneity and authenticity in your activities of your life.
Okay.
Right. Those two pieces have been very interesting for me, and seeing how those two connect with one another, especially for us living as lay people, right? We're not up in the mountains or something like that, right?
Right.
We're going to be interacting with the complicated world full of these obstacles, right? And so that creates a kind of interesting authenticity problem there, which I think is very deep and like a real genuine problem, you know, where people's lives lose that feeling of authenticity. Like, I think it's a real deep problem. You know, obviously Carl Rogers is one of my kind of psychologists I really admire, saw this as a deep psychological problem. That's probably why I love him so much, right? Mm-hmm. He put his finger on that part too. And so I see both sides of that. I get what you're saying. And I guess I see the other side of it too. You know, can you act authentically in your life in a moment by moment way? Can you be authentic? And can your also life reflect a vision of like who you really are, that your outer life starts to say, okay, this is a representation of who I am really. Mm-hmm. Or does your life veer off in some other ways where you're like, oh God, this isn't right. This is artificial. Mm-hmm. This isn't real. Something's wrong with this. But a lot of people's lives, I think, potentially do that, but it's dangerous.
Well, it's like we spend our time scheduled for obvious practical reasons, you know what I'm saying? But then, what's the opposite to that would be to spend your time doing whatever it is that you wanted to do, as opposed to doing things that you needed to do. And you do things because you have to do them right now. But what if you were able to do things when you felt like doing it, you know, spontaneous, you know what I'm saying? And so for me, that it seems to be that, you know, you talk about the other side of the coin, that seems to be the yin and the yang of like having responsibilities, having a schedule, is you do things as you have to, and you have to do them at this particular time. And if you remove those constraints, or you work through them, or you at least bring balance at some point in your life, that you're free to act as you want when you want to do so. Now, obviously I'm not talking about like, you know, pounding a fifth of Jack Daniels and driving a, you know, school bus into the lake. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, but like dancing, right? Singing, taking a trip, going to see a concert, like driving by a friend's house and just ringing the doorbell, not even bothering to call or text. Like, I'm in the neighborhood. I want to hang out, you know, or going somewhere by yourself for the sake of going it, you know, just for shits and giggles, as the kids are saying nowadays. You know,
I don't think they are.
Yeah, they're probably not. You know, so
sorry, Gen Z.
Yeah, sorry, Gen Z. That is not what you were saying. But that seems to me that seems to me to be the balance. And I will say, man, like, I don't know a lot of people who are spontaneous. Actually,
you're talking about like a very like hey, like let's have the spontaneity of the life of my day, right? You're talking about even on that level, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about mundane.
Like, you know, it's interesting, like, you know, I talk with my daughter about this, and even the sleep schedules are artificial.
Absolutely. The work schedules are artificial.
Who
said we need to do 5 days a week? Where did that come from? Somebody was talking to me about this the other day, and I was like, wait, hold on. They're like, oh, because I find hustle culture in our culture to be so fake, you know, so fake. And we always dunk on Jordan Peterson, and we'll continue to dunk on his ass, you know, until we never do a podcast about him, because he's not worth an hour of my time.
It's like getting like posterized, like the old things where Michael would be jamming over some
random guy from
like the Bucks or something like that. Like Jordan Peterson could be that, like Michael Jordan just dunking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but he's definitely a champion of martyrdom and, you know, work yourself into the bone for another generation, right? And this kind of like hustle culture to me is it's a sort of a sickness. Because if you do the math, at least in my mind, you do the math and you look at the ratios of work to what you receive from that effort, from that merit, It's so lopsided, it's crazy. It's
Yeah,
so
yeah.
lopsided, it's crazy. And I just, you know, I feel like some of these things are obstacles to you being who you are when you want to be that. And everyone's got responsibilities. I understand. I understand. But I don't know that many people that are spontaneous at all, ever.
Well, that's why I think we were going to do the episode at some point, which we probably do have to do, neoliberalism and you. Like, how did this happen?
Right. Yes.
Like, what happened here? You know, but I know in Christopher Ryan's book, Civilized to Death, I was talking with my daughter about this. And I was like, yeah, the sleep schedule is artificial. It's artificial. It's just based around the workday.
Correct.
So someone decided you have to have a workday and now you have to live your life like this. But there's nothing to say that the system wants to do that. Nothing to say that that's natural in any way. But you convince people in a weird way that you have to sleep in these schedules and work in these schedules. And there's nothing intrinsic to them. But
not
if you ask
all.
People, they would say, oh, yeah. I know Chinese medicine people who would probably say, oh, yeah, that's just how it's supposed to be. No.
No, it's you not.
Know? And it's interesting because they were, again, in the Christopher Ryan book, Civilized to Death, he's an entertaining writer, right? You know, you could say whether he's totally accurate anthropologist. I don't know. But I find what he says interesting. And he was talking about, you know, when the Europeans showed up in the Amazon and they're like, well, you got to live on this schedule. And the people looked at them like, what are you talking about? I have to live on this schedule. I don't need to have a schedule. When I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I sleep. When I feel like making love, I make love. When I want to go like get some food, I get the food. What are you talking about? You know? And there wasn't like, it's artificial. It's not real.
It's not real.
It's not real.
It's not real.
You know, but people can feel tortured even with that. And they use the word fake. And that's, it's funny because I've been talking about that. We sometimes get weirdly simpatico before we do these things. So I was talking with one of my dear, dear friends from my very first day of grad school, Jenny, Jen Passion. And I was using that word fake over and over and over again. I kept using that word fake. It's fake, which is, of course, the opposite of authentic.
Correct.
Right? It's inauthentic. So, there's lots of ways you can frame it. And I like, I get totally what you're saying. Can I be spontaneously joyful in the moment in my day?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I not have the ability to let myself do that? Right? That's interesting, right? Even in that immediate thing. Can I go and just see a friend? Because I feel the need to see that friend, right?
Yeah.
You know, or can I like say, oh, yeah, I'm going to play some music today. Fuck it. I'll play some music. I feel musical. Let me play it. That's interesting for you, Daniel, because you're a champion of spontaneity.
Well, literally right now, my drum circle friends are playing at the beach, you know, so it's...
Oh, you're stuck doing this. Sorry, man.
No, it's all good. You know, it's another kind of spontaneity. Yeah, no, but totally. It being, you know, that's why art is, you know, and whatever kind of art you want helps people tap into that layer of spontaneity, that layer of creativity, that layer of like, I'll call it egolessness, you know, because you're just going to try. You're going to just, I'm going to just try it. Like, you know, whatever. However it comes out, it comes out. Maybe it's good, maybe whatever, but at least I'll have learned. I learned through doing, you know?
So I think I had two sides. I had multiple sides of this. So I had like the immediate, like in the moment, we kind of emphasize different parts of it. You emphasize like, okay, in the course of my day, can I be spontaneous in the activities that I choose?
Yeah.
I also had the thing like, if I have to teach or I have to interact with a patient or I have to like do whatever, am I spontaneously myself in the moment of interacting with that person?
Fair.
Because if I can be authentic, I can put them in the position of being more authentic. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm real, that tends to pull more out from other people. And then now they can be real too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That bothers me. I don't like this fake shit.
Yeah.
I think it has to be real, like in the moment in that way. And then in the other part of this, I was thinking also of like, boy, you don't really like your career. You really don't like your relationship.
Well, yeah.
You don't really like, then your life is really going inauthentic in that sense too. And so I think there's like a thought, and that gets you into the obstacles. Cause a lot of the obstacles are like, hey man, the way you're handling your security and family part of your life, that ain't working. The way you're handling a professional part of your life, that ain't working. The way you're handling your relational part of your life, that ain't working. And those things are inauthentic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the natural thing that will come out of that, and this again is per Carl Rogers, you know, with these obstacles, is you'll start to get psychologically fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll feel that inauthenticity and you'll grind against yourself. Or the way he likes to talk about it, your concept of who you are won't match who you really are. And now you're in a Taoist fucking Chinese finger trap, right?
Yeah.
You know, like you're really in a lot of trouble then if you get into that space, you know? And it'll create the anxiety and depression and all these problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, so I saw the obstacles as like being like against that kind of thing. You need to have that authenticity. And again, in my conversation with Jenny, I was like, God, a lot of this stuff just it looks fake and it's going to be damaging for people. Not in a judgy way, but in like, again, like we talked about a little bit in some of these episodes more recently, in a diagnostic way. Like, this is a problem.
Right.
Okay. So I thought about it that way. You seem like you're down with that, right? Yeah, so these are obstacles to that. Yeah. I also thought about our other favorite Carl Jung, right? And his idea of individuation. Can you become like a free person in your own individual identity? On the one hand, free from the external artificial things, you know, the kind of things we were talking about that maybe are more imposed on you from the outside world. Can you free yourself from those and, you know, individuate yourself from those things? And can you also individuate yourself from aspects of your own psyche, like the mischievous mind stuff we've been talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you can free yourself more internally, and then you've individuated, you know, in that sense, you're not compelled by the outside world to be something artificial.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're not compelled by your inside world either. You know, your own psychological baggage or your own psychological complexities
mm-hmm.
that kind of derail you from inside. Can you change that? And then in Jung's point of view, then you'll really connect with the world in a deeper way. Then you'll connect with the archetypes that are not only inside of you, but outside of you, and your whole life will become richer. That's individuation. And I thought, okay, these are obstacles to individuation too. Does that make sense to you as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Because if you get like, if your own internal mind is too mischievous, it'll fuck you up from the inside. If you get bunched up with too much family, too much relationship, too much work, negative aspects of security, then that'll dominate you from the outside. And then you can't individuate.
Right.
You know? So I thought, okay, those are obstacles to that. We're on the same page.
And just so I can say that I said it, because I'm hearing it in my mind, in my mind's ear. which is the third ear that's on the inside of your brain that hears your own voice talking.
I like it, the idea of the third ear. I have to open my third ear.
They talk about the third eye, but they don't talk about the third ear.
Deeper, the third ear.
Yeah, you gotta
that's hear. The secret teaching.
Exactly. That's a spirit.
Yeah, yeah.
On the point of individuation, we're not talking about individualization. In that you develop such a strong sense of being an individual that you end up disconnected from influence or your community. That's not the individuation we're talking about. I think, you know, individuation for me is a maturity of the self, is getting at least an associate's, maybe a bachelor's, and maybe at the end level, a PhD in emotional intelligence. And that then frees you from internal story, including genetic, to whatever degree you can be free of that, as well as external story, the societal, familial, you know, relational, scholastic, you know, whatever, all of those external pressures.
Where Rumi says to write your own myth.
Exactly.
That thing. Yeah, yeah.
That that you're in charge of that. That whatever hand is writing the story of the universe as it unfolds, you have an eraser and your own pencil to be like, nah, not that part. You know, nah, we're not good. No, we're not doing that. No. He did not wear a pink shirt today. He wore a pink boa. You know?
Yeah. Make a statement, right? Why stop at the shirt? Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't want to cut you off. Do you have more on that?
No, you're good. I wanted to make sure that, because we're dancing around something that we're not going to get to today, but that's okay.
It's like kind of fascinating, because we had this conversation a few weeks ago, and it was one of the weirder episodes to record, because I had a very painful conversation that afternoon earlier. And then we just recorded this shit. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, we're in whatever headspace we're in.
Yeah, you totally.
Talked about it. Like sometimes, like if you're teaching, you're a doctor, we're doing what we're doing. Sometimes you're like, okay, I'm in some pain, but the show must go on. But we had kind of an interesting one. We were talking about the Yidam. And I realized how important this point that you're making here is to you, the way I'm hearing it. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard, like, I was talking about how, you know, we as individual beings have to take our responsibility. If the universe opens up opportunities, we have to take them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes for you, and it was on point five of the nine things that can fuck up your life, where it was important for you to say, like, I can't remember how you phrased it. You said interesting. You said, like, well, that sounds a lot like an American or something like that, you said. And I was like, oh, Daniel's hearing this more like individualism's pull yourself up by your own bootstraps kind of stuff. I didn't mean it that way. Wasn't my intention, but you're saying, your reaction was kind of like, oh, it could sound that way, And I was like, oh, that's where Daniel's coming from with this. And that's a very important point for you. For you, you're kind of bothered by like this hyper individualism of American society at some level, where I'm like bothered by hyper conformism. I see Americans as being essentially conformists, but we have, it's both true. It's not like one side is true and the other side isn't true.
It well,
Americans, yeah.
it's a level of misunderstanding that you are taught that you are a unique individual and no one else is like you and da 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 da. I am an American. I am this thing. It's like me. And yet they're feeding the same story to everybody and everyone is doing it. So that they're both, so both are happening at the same time. But for me, it's the removal of this kind of like unique aspect of yourself. I mean, yes, we are unique in of course, in our own ways, but you're not an island unto yourself, And for me, that is the problem, And the hustle culture embodies that in your, the more that I work, the more that I get. But it's still bound on self and like, well, I got to take care of my family. Well, as my teacher Andre said, well, why only your family? Why don't you take care of more than just your family? What, you know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah,
do.
because you want to build community. It's a deep part of your nature.
Yeah.
And you have
Yeah.
this feeling like, well, wait a minute, people are going to atomize themselves into these little individual, either them or just a very small group of people that they feel connected with, right? That might be just be like their little nuclear family, or maybe a few extensions of family members outside of that. And it all becomes very atomized in that way, which is true,
Yeah.
right? That's true. And that seems individualistic, but I also see that like that's how the culture is wired.
Yes,
Like
absolutely.
that's not a bug, that's a feature, right?
The feature
It's
of it, yeah.
atomized. And I feel like it's conformist, So, and both of those things are true. It's one of those funny statements where both sides are true. We didn't have a chance to talk about it in the moment. We were towards the end of the episode, and I thought, oh, that's what Daniel's hearing or what I'm saying. And I knew I wanted to come back to it whenever it came back up again. Because I was going, oh yeah, this is really important for Daniel. This feature of, you wanting to build spiritual community, right? This thing works against that because people will atomize, right?
We did I did an episode a couple weeks ago with Priscilla and just called The Community. It was on Sangha, and I read this like kind of long article, I think by Thich Nhat Hanh, and he talked about like if you take a rock and you throw it in the water, it'll just sit in a river, it'll just sink to the bottom. But if you put it on a boat, you can carry lots of rocks, actually, and I love the idea of like a bunch of people together floating down the river, and because I think that it lets it it's a very tangible first person reminder that you're not alone, which I talk about on a regular basis, because we see lots of people in the clinic. We have various layers of students and people who are coming into the clinic. Patients and students do have some similarities in a sense, at least in my mind, when in the role that I am sitting in, because I'm always trying to educate, right? Whether it be scholastically for one or trying to empower people with their own health so they don't feel like that they are just stuck in the position that they're in. They could make some changes if they wanted to, that would positively affect their health outcome, And part of that thing, if for me, it's always reminding people that like it's your journey, but it's a shared one, and that like that reminder is an important one, at least from my perspective, But like my mom said many moons ago when we had her on the podcast, for her and for our culture, it's not me, it's we. And you know, because I'm not surrounded by, you know, my countrymen, mainly because my countrymen, the numbers are decreasing daily. Hint, 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 wink, wink. It's bullshit. But anyways, that I find
about, like, we had an episode, like, how much we want to talk about these things, and it was really kind of Daniel's choice to be like, okay, I'll allude to it when it's right to allude to.
Right.
It.
So that's as far as I'm gonna go.
Yeah.
And so I build that around me, you know, and because I have appreciated it when I have gone to, you know, new environments that were unfamiliar to me in a spiritual setting or in any kind of setting. And there's always other people, even if it's one or two people, who have been very kind to me, you know, and have looked past whatever appearance that they see as this, you know, flawed being. And have seen the human inside and said, hey, let me come help you, you know, let me make you feel at home. And I want to do that for other people as much as possible. And I feel like if I could stoke that fire of all the other fires that we enjoy stoking, you know, through wisdom and the movement towards, you know, passion and bliss and whatnot, like this fire of igniting someone else's sense of like togetherness, to me is it can extend so easily beyond any, you know, quote unquote spiritual teaching. It's compassion and action in my mind.
Yeah, like I feel like in the Tibetan Buddhist world, I had a lot of good experiences of this too, where they're very good at like doing that.
Mm-hmm.
See, there's a cultural difference. And you'll meet people and they'll go, oh, I know you from some previous life. They'll say that kind of shit.
Mm.
I remember the guy who was doing the translating. The first time I went out to the Dalai Lama's monastery, I was there to do a practice that like is the main one, that's like kind of the core one of my whole life. You know, I initially got it first with like Lama Glenn, but I wanted to do even like a more advanced version.
Mm.
And Lama Glenn was like, well, start working on it now. And then when the opportunity comes to get it, go, you know? So the opportunity came to go up there. And it was the first time I was in the monastery up there. And the gentleman who's doing the translating, this, you know, really very endearing Tibetan man, kept going like, I know you. We know each other, you know? And so you already were like building those bonds, you know,
mm-hmm.
in this way. And again, in the context of kind of like a metaphysical realization too, we're not just interconnected. We're interconnected in so many ways, right?
Mm.
We're interconnected in the sense of like everything is interconnected. Physics, entanglement, everything is interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
We're interconnected all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's just part of the elements of reality, right?
Yes.
Things are interconnected just by their nature. The universe is like one big hologram and everything is feeding back and everything else. Indra's net, the deepest level. You can go on that maybe, or maybe you can go deeper, I don't know. But in any case, you got that part. But then as individuals, we're karmically interconnected too. And you can meet people and go, we're karmically interconnected, right? Which mm-hmm. is what basically, you know, that person was saying there. I feel this connection with you. And he said it multiple times, you know, over the course of the, you know, our time trying to chatting and things like, I know you already, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, that level of metaphysical interconnection, because mm-hmm. we've interacted before, right? Yeah, I haven't always been Eric. You haven't always been Daniel, and other people haven't bothered. But yeah, you know, we've met each other before. You know, that's why we vibe,
mm-hmm.
right? We have interconnectivity in that way. You know,
and even,
yeah,
even throughout the day, Eric, you're not always Eric. You're
yeah.
Professor Baker.
Go to those roles, uh-huh. Yeah,
you know, and that, but that's a shift in your identity. I mean, maybe on some level you're you, but the way that other people are seeing you in that way, you're not the same. You know, you're not the same person. So we're, you know,
I can say about that real quick, Daniel, is like my goal in doing any of these things, whether it's as a teacher or
you're going to take the thought from me. So go ahead, continue.
Oh, fuck it, go ahead.
No. Yeah, that we try and weave the same thing all the way through.
Boom, you got it. I was going to try that. Yeah.
That's where I was going. Yeah, totally.
Finish it, man. I didn't want to step on your thing.
Yeah, no. That we try and we, even though I am wearing a different hat, literally, although I don't, I always wear the same hat when we record. It's kind of like, you know, part of the uniform.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you the same way. But we try, you know, we're wearing different hats, but it's the same being who is wearing a different hat. And I, you know, there's certain moments in your life where you just like take a snapshot, you know, a Polaroid, and you keep it in mind for those who don't want to know what a Polaroid is for our, you know, Gen Z audience. ages 19 and below. Maybe you don't know what a Polaroid is, but that was a camera that you would take a picture with and it would print the photo immediately from the camera. I know. Amazing.
You know what's funny about that, Daniel, is like that's retro cool now.
Is it cool now? Okay, Gen cool.
Zers, like buy well, those cameras boom. And they print those things up. Gen Z.
Okay, so for younger millennials who missed that fad,
it's like the millennials who won't know.
Yeah, they're like, wait, what's a Polaroid? Is that a brand? No. But I stood in front of mirrors as we all have, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of times. But anytime that I wore a different uniform, specifically one with the hat, I took a Polaroid in my mind and I kept it there. And the first time that I did that, I think was my like freshman year playing football in high school.
Oh, okay.
And the next time I did that was when.
Do you have a little snapshot of yourself that you did?
Yeah. And I was in
Polaroid.
Then I was in the army, you know, and I had my uniform on and I had, you know, whatever. And then maybe one was on my, you know, like wedding day. You know what I'm saying? And there's been numerous times like this throughout where I'll just be like, okay, I did that thing in this lifetime, you know? And what I've learned over the time is that like the person underneath is the same, just the dressing changed, you know? And that's something that like, I don't know, I'm becoming more proud of as time goes on, actually.
Yeah, it's really kind of fascinating, this whole thing. Like, again, it goes to the idea, I guess, of like interconnectivity from this other point of view. I had like a kind of an interesting email exchange with Lama Glenn H. Mullen, one of my dear spiritual teachers and friends, and same for true for you, Daniel.
Yeah.
And I was trying to, this is more like a obstacle number three question in a way, though that one keeps popping up in different ways. But I was like talking to him about what I really wanted from like relations with people, you know, that kind of interconnectivity. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, things around love and things around sex and things around those kinds of things. But when I wrote him back, I said, you know, that isn't really what I care about. What I really care about is I care about like intellectual, emotional, and spiritual connection. I wrote him back with that.
Yeah.
And I said, if you really ask me the honest to God truth, what I really want to be is I want to be in one of those Buddhist interconnectivity Pure Land places.
Mm.
Where you're with the people you have the karmic interconnections with, and you're all helping each other get enlightened. That's what I really want, like a Buddhist goddess land or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that desire to have that kind of interconnectivity, to recognize like, oh, these are my people, the same way you're talking about it, right? And the connections might be emotional, they might be intellectual, some could be physical, some could be sexual, but they don't have to be, right? But to be in that place where everyone is working for everyone's mutual enlightenment, that's kind of my ideal, you know? So I run back, like, I want to be, there's one of the Buddhist goddesses, Vajrayogini. I want to be in Vajrayogini's Pure Land. To which he replied, nothing. I was like, I don't care. You reply nothing, that's fine. He probably just got busy. But, you know, I was like, yeah, that's really, if you ask me deep down, that's what I want. That's what I want. I want to share my spiritual world and spiritual space with other people who want to share it back, so we can all equally resonate and enlighten one another together. Like, that's a goal.
Yeah.
If you ask me deep down, what do I really, really want? Why would I come here to this mortal coil? Using the word mortal coil, phrase mortal coil. Again, because I like to use it. Someone called me on that recently, said, you use mortal coil a lot. Yeah,
I've literally never heard you say that once.
Someone said I say it a lot. Anyways, a little Shakespearean, right? Oh, this mortal coil. So, you know, like when you talk about that, like, and you dig down to what you really want, like at the core, why would you be here? Because I want to do that, you know? And that's a kind of a level of interconnectivity that's really deep, right?
Yeah.
That relies on like, okay, we're interconnected, but, you know, we are all interconnected and sharing this common goal, this common endeavor, right?
Yeah.
That's what I really want. I want that more than almost anything, really, you know?
The song from the Spice Girls comes to mind. So tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
Yeah, it's so perfect, Daniel. You nailed it. That's right. Ginger, sporty, and I, like, nope.
Yeah.
Not going there. No, like the whole thing of like posh.
Right.
I'll get up and I'll do the boogie with them.
It was scary and
scary spice.
I think pumpkin, right?
I think the last one was baby.
Baby spice?
Baby spice.
Yeah, I wouldn't know, man. I have no idea.
I have like this is a bizarre thing, but sitting in the downstairs bathroom and the little like magazine rack, why it's there, I have no idea. Why there's even a magazine rack by the toilet, but it's sitting there and there's an
in case
old
you run out of toilet paper, you could use paper from the magazine. Well,
Spice Girl, she got used a long time ago. There's some old magazine that was bought for like kitschy reasons. And it must be like, you know, whatever when they first came out, it's sitting around still. So I think occasionally my son like opens it up, like sitting on the can and looks at pictures of the Spice Girls, sticks it back in the thing. No, but I think that's, you know, I mean, if you get to it, that's,
yeah,
we talk about interconnectivity, you know, and Sangha and these kinds of things. That's what, tell me what I want, what I really, really want. I want to zigga, 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 zooms out. I can't remember what the hell that shit was supposed to go.
I think I said, yeah.
No, yeah, that wasn't close, but all right. So, we got a boogie, I guess. Probably,
yeah. So the right? was there any more of the obstacles that there is one more?
Well, I have like some other stuff about what are alternatives here. Maybe we'll do one follow up episode and we'll lap it into the next of the obstacles. Or
sure.
Something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay, fair. Sounds good. This is a decent place to stop, right?
Yeah, I think
you
so.
Once you get to the Spice Girls, there's really nothing else
once
to say.
Once you've gone to the
it's
Spice
an episode
Girls,
killer.
Everything else is just downhill. I don't know how to get on top of them. Oh, wait a minute.
That's really funny, is they could never even come up with one other song. Like never.
I mean, listen, if you ask the, what are they called? Spice Heads? I don't know what their groupies are called, you know? Spice Heads? Is that them?
Spice eaters? Wasn't there something else that was spice eaters?
I'm not sure. I'm gonna call them Spice Heads. Okay. Spice Heads know what it is. You know, we know that they keep it real. You know, and
it's amazing that you're
can't even do it.
You're volunteering yourself to be part of that group.
Yeah, I'm in it. I'm definitely in it for sure. I'm spiced out, as they say.
Yeah.
That's why I only drink spice.
Off camera, there's all the spice gear is over there sitting on the side.
Spiced rum and pumpkin spice and all the everything nice. So
you got a leotard with a Union Jack on it that.
Oh, yeah. That totally. Yeah.
And you want to spice out. Uh-huh. That's yeah. It. Yeah. Just sitting a little off camera there, just to the
left. Yeah. Light up the spice and get spicy. Anyways, Eric.
I think the idea maybe we'll build on it. Like maybe the cap on it would just be like, okay, we're given alternative ways of thinking about what these things are obstacles to, right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. And I think that's important for the whole question, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like we said at the beginning, this is basically a public brainstorming for our soon to be, you know, written book. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. I mean, we've been, you know, Eric and I have been chatting about this stuff since, you know, I was in school and I started in 2011 and finished in 2015. So this has been a very, very long running conversation, you know, to get to this point, but we're getting there. And I feel like we're, you know, maybe a couple months away from finishing something that has been a long kind of cycle. And I'm as always, man, super grateful to be doing this with you, brother. It's legit. This is, you know, I mean, in addition to being able to like get these things again from you, but then interact with them in a way that is alive for me, it's you know, and then share them with people. It's, you know, it's the value is very, very high, very, very high. So even if I'm not doing something else that I love doing, I love doing this. And shameless plug, we love hearing from our audience. So if you want to, you know, get a hold of us, hit us up. You know, like I said before, as I say in every episode, we are brought to you by our motherfucking selves, you know, so we are our own sponsors. What's up? We don't ask for nothing. We do this from the love of doing it, but, you know, eventually we'll write a book and we will sell that so we can, you know, get ourselves on, you know, some, maybe, I don't know, Good Morning America or even Good Day Nigeria. I'm down with that. Like whatever it is, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah. What up, Cleveland? We'll do that.
Yeah. What's
the morning show?
What's popping Mobile? I'm good. You know, like,
right.
Yeah. So anyways, but feel free, you know, feel free or feeling, you know, obliged to hit us up. Jin and Tantra at gmail.com. Leave a comment in the YouTube, or drop us a like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, get the drops when we drop them. Of course, people who are listening to this audio wise, you can leave, I think, a like, or you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts for sure, possibly even Spotify. I don't know. I don't get down with either one of those things. So, forgive me for my ignorance. But we're also on Instagram at the Jin and Tantra podcast. So you can follow us there. Occasionally we post some things that we're doing there. So, we're reachable for sure. Anyways, we'll catch you guys on the next one. So for Eric, this is Daniel. Be well. Good luck. Peace.
I want you to get together. I want you to get together.